Welcome to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. I'm Justine Toe. Well, there's an election coming up. You can barely escape all the political advertising as one side will slam the other. Sometimes it is thought that there is a Christian vote, but the more that you talk to Christians, the more it is you realise that they have a huge range of views on very different issues. So Christians vote in all different kinds of ways. And this poses the question, you know, what does it mean for people who are Christian to participate in a democratic election in a way that also reflects their Christianity? So we're going to talk about this today. You know, is there such a thing as the Christian vote? And what sorts of things do Christians consider when they go into the ballot box? Or do you have the case that a person of faith will leave their faith at the door when they enter the polling booth? So I've got Simon Smart and John Dixon here today. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Justine.
Lovely to be here.
Now, Simon, I've heard Tony Abbott say that he won't let his faith influence the way that he approaches politics, but I think you've got some thoughts about that.
Yeah, I think if I was his advisor, I'd tell him to say that slightly differently. I get what he's talking about. He wants to give people a reassurance that he's not going to kind of impose his Christian faith onto the electorate in a way that's sort of heavy-handed and so on. So I get that. But I think someone who's a Christian can't, you know, separate their faith from other aspects of their life. And that's true of people who aren't believers as well. We all have a worldview that we bring to these things. And I think we should expect that our politicians will bring that to the table. They'll be clear on what that is and that will influence them. And that's the case with Tony Abbott as much as anyone else.
Well, John, if everyone brings a worldview to the table, then why is it the case that in America you've got all Christians assumed to be Republicans? And is that true for the Australian Christian voter as well? Should they be voting with one particular party over another?
There are particular historical reasons why Christians flocked to the Republican Party in the 1980s. And the sociologists and historians have worked that over, and they've seen that it was a particular courting of the Christian community by the Republican Party in that period. And a lot of Christians fell for it. But as things have sort of washed up in the last 20 or 30 years, there's a lot more variety. And so you do get lots of Democratic voting Christians nowadays. And I think that's a lot healthier. We've never had that to nearly the same degree in Australia. It's probably true to say that Christians tend to lean slightly on the conservative side of politics, but not in any organised, dramatic, militant way that we think of in America.
A lot of people tend to vote one way if they're born into a particular electorate. Should Christians think about that when they're making their choices?
Well, I think the first thing to say about a Christian vote is that it's a thoughtful vote. And if you're just voting for the people you always grew up knowing everyone around you voted for, then it's not thoughtful. So demographics shouldn't really place a Christian in a straitjacket. Christians should, I mean, the gospel of Jesus is meant to lift you above your culture and above your own biases and preferences in your own life and in your relationships and, of course, in your politics. So a thoughtful vote is a Christian vote.
Would it be the case then that it's also thoughtful as a voter to not simply vote for someone because they're a Christian?
Definitely. It always strikes me as odd that people would vote for a Christian politician because they're a Christian. Surely we need to vote for people that we think will be best for the nation. The idea that we should favour a Christian, I think, is anathema, actually, to Christian theology. God doesn't show favouritism at all. And the political passages in the New Testament make clear that God views even the pagan Roman leaders as servants of his. So if Paul can speak of the emperor and his cronies as, in some sense, servants of God there to do good to society, surely we can think you can have an atheist as a prime minister and it doesn't really pose a problem. Now, if you think there's something flawed about that atheist's views and how they'll impact the nation, then that's a good reason, but not simply because they don't believe in God.
We did have an atheist prime minister and the sky didn't fall in. So, okay, now, Simon, economic management is often seen as the kind of most important issue in an election. And it's, I guess, the idea that economic success is often seen as the easiest way to work out that we're going well as a nation. But, you know, should the economy have such a big role and impact on the way that we vote?
Well, it matters a lot. We want people to be in government who will manage the economy well, that's for sure. It has a whole lot of important effects on all of us. But when that's the only thing that people are thinking about, I think we can go wrong. Lots of commentators talk about this. Ross Gittins is a good example, where he'll say, yes, the economy is really important, but there's a whole lot of other factors that we should be thinking about that will be things that will foster community, things will be good for families, things that will help lift up those people who are at the bottom of the heap and who are struggling. And so growth, economic growth, when it's thought of as the be-all and end-all, I think can lead us into paths that we might not want to go, not the least of which is our unsustainable lives, that where we're just endlessly growing, producing consumer goods and so on that are having massive environmental damage and maybe relational damage as well.
On the way to work this morning, Buff was driving me in, and we passed a little brick house on the North Shore somewhere. And right next door was this giant two-story thing on the same size block. And Buff said, right there is a symbol of the delusion of growth. She said probably, you know, a 3 or 4 person family grew up in that little brick thing, and probably the same size or even a smaller family is growing up in that giant thing next door. The myth of growth, that you actually always need to be expanding, I think is one of the problems. It's how the family is faring in their relationships with one another inside that small or giant house that really is the issue.
And with the people around them.
Yeah.
I did read in your article on how to vote, John, that you say that when we talk about economic growth, it's a real glimpse into the soul of the country.
It is. If the bottom line is the bottom line, I do think something is a little bit wrong. Growth for growth's sake is meaningless. But if growth is there because we want to achieve greater aims, we want to see more people lifted out of poverty, we want to see more community centres and community services available. If growth serves that end, growth is good. But if growth is the goal in and of itself, well, then it is an insight into our soul, into our longing for material stuff that doesn't really contribute to life.
Simon, newspapers will often do a mock-up of how individual voters might fare if this or that party gets into. So if our obsession with the economy is an insight into the soul, right, of the voter, then I suppose those newspaper features are also a glimpse into the soul of, you know, of us working out what's in it for me.
Yes, and I think this is where some of us want to challenge that idea. So if I'm approaching my voting only along the lines of how's this going to benefit me? And I look up the policies and I say, right, I'm going to get this bit of tax break, and I'm going to get, this is going to help my superannuation, and my kids will get this particular gain. And if that's, you know, the sort of totality of the way I'm going to approach this voting, I think I've gone wrong. People, and it doesn't always work like this, let's be honest, but if at our best, the person with the Christian faith ought to be thinking about what policies are going to benefit the community, the common good, not just me. It should be a vote for other people, thinking about especially those who are not doing as well as others, so people who are on the margins, people who are suffering, struggling, needing help. That should be the sort of thing we approach our voting with, that sort of mindset. When it's only about my little extra $50 in the pay packet, I think we're all thinking that way, it's a recipe for trouble.
I totally agree with that. I think the fundamental thing about a Christian vote is that it's a vote for other people. Honour others above yourself. You know, this is the principle that applies to all of the Christian life. And so the idea of, you know, if I'm a worker, I'm going to vote for who's going to give the unions more power so I get X. Or if I'm a small business, you know, owner, I'm going to vote for the party that's going to give me more freedoms and able to sack more people. That's not a Christian way to think about it. We should be using this beautiful gift of the power of a democratic vote to use that power for the sake of people who need our vote more than we do.
Well, just say that we have that particular attitude that you want to vote for other people before yourself. What do you do then when you've come to the stage where I think many of us are this particular election, and you're looking at the options on offer and you're like, I just don't know what to do, you know? Both parties will have some sorts of policies that may benefit the other kind of, and the more vulnerable in our community. But at the same time, they might have other policies that would be a deal breaker for you as well. So how do you approach this thoughtfully.
It's incredibly hard. A week out from the election, I do not know who I'm going to vote for. As I read through the policies of both of the major parties and the minor parties, there are things I profoundly disagree with on both sides. And there are character issues on both sides that trouble me. I don't just mean about the party leaders. I mean about the way the organisations function. In the end, I think I will sort of draw up some kind of mental tally and not vote on one issue, but sort of try and take a broader approach and think in the end what might be the best way I can contribute to the good of this country, and in particular the good of those who need my vote more than I do.
Yeah, I think the need to recognise the complexity of these things is crucial. I think the Christians in America in the last 20 years, we talked about this, which were captured by the Republican Party, tended to, I think, make what they now see as a huge mistake, to fall down on single issue voting, maybe two issues. By doing that, you then ignore a whole lot of other complex factors that you might also want to bring your faith to. People are dying around the world to get this sort of privilege, to have the vote. So we ought to work hard at it, recognising that sometimes it's going to be choosing between the lesser of two evils.
Who would Jesus vote for? Come on.
Well, I think Jesus would confound, surprise, disturb us. It's fair to say he would be radical when it comes to issues of justice and care for the poor, and very conservative when it comes to personal ethics and sexual morality, that sort of thing. So, work out what he'd do. You need to factor those things in and put them into the mix.
I'm going with Simon.
So far, we've been talking in general terms. What does that look like when you really land the policies down to this election?
Well, I think there are two key issues, one on one side, one on the other, that Christians are really going to struggle with in this election. Kevin Rudd is an advocate of gay marriage. And although it's true Christians should not impose their views legislatively on a nation, it's equally true that if you think marriage and family is good for the country, good for the moral health of the country, then you're going to find that really, really difficult if you have classical Christian views of what family and society is about. But on the other side, Christians are going to be, I imagine, equally troubled by Tony Abbott's policy that family members of genuine refugees will not be allowed to join them. That this is kind of his punishing method to try and reduce refugees by saying to a real refugee who gets here, recognised as refugee, their family members won't be able to join them. Well, every Christian is going to feel that's a betrayal of Christian ethics. So I don't know how you preference one over the other, because both are about the soul and character of our nation. If you really believe in family, you're going to be deeply troubled by the gay marriage question. If you believe in compassion for the poorest of the poor, those who need our vote above ourselves, then you're going to be deeply troubled by the idea that someone who's left a war-torn persecution context is going to get to our country and not be able to bring their family over, which has been the rule ever since the Refugee Convention. And so I can't see how a Christian can happily cast a vote for either policy. And in the end, you're just going to have to decide based on other factors, probably. It's not going to be a clear one over the other. A Christian's going to be torn. We live in a torn world. And hopefully Christians can just live with the fact that whoever they vote for in this election, they're going to be voting for things they don't believe in. But when you realise that we live in a fallen world, that's going to be the case every time anyway. It's just particularly the case in this instance. But God is a God who can redeem, and that's what we want to be looking for.
Okay, well, as we lead up to this election, just think about a thoughtful vote, consider all the issues, and maybe even if you're not a Christian, why don't you pray? Because I think this kind of election needs it.